Yeah, thanks, Alex, and thanks for inviting me and sharing my results on what I call non-causal Page-Wouters circuits, or as the actual paper is called, the Page-Wouters formulation of indefinite causal order. This is joint work with Mario Skrum and Philippe Alain-Guerin, and of course our supervisor, Czesław Bruckner. And I am first gonna hopefully briefly talk about the process matrix formalism and causal reference frames, as well as the Page-Wouters formalism and especially its variant that models quantum circuits, and then about the actual content of the paper that is combining these two things. I'll try to present a general idea to you and then go over the two simplest examples that we put in the paper. Right. Okay, first let's say something about indefinite causal order. This is a framework developed by Onya Noreshko, Fabio Costa, and Czesław, and concerns parties that are thought to be inside an isolated laboratory where there is a well-defined notion of local time inside this laboratory, and at some point this lab receives some input system, then an agent inside this laboratory performs a quantum operation on this input system and then sends out an output quantum system. And then you consider multiple such tiny laboratories, and a general environment or process that connects the two and describes, encodes the correlations between the two operations. What we will consider specifically are purified versions of these laboratories. So in addition to the input and output, they also get an ancilla so that their operation can be described unitarily. And then this process G is a map on those unitary operations performed by the agents. And if this map G of UA and UB is unitary, we call G a pure process. These pure processes, I'm mostly going to talk about two agents, and everything, of course, can be generalized to an arbitrary number of agents. Right, so these pure processes are important. First of all, there are processes that are incompatible with a global causal order, which means there is no global notion of time. And they are the non-causal processes that the paper is mainly about. Originally, there have been various processes given spit out by the formalism, so to speak, but many of them didn't have a clear physical interpretation. So people were looking for additional requirements of what processes might be physically relevant. And one suggestion was that only purifiable processes are the physical ones. Which is why we're looking at the pure processes. And these purifiable processes can, or the pure processes, are those that can be thought to map a well-defined causal past to a well-defined global causal future. So we have a picture like this, the tiny laboratories and some general input state start out in a region where there is a global notion of time and everything evolves according to this global time. Then there is weird stuff happening in between that can be incompatible with the notion of global time. But then at the end, the agents and inside the laboratories emerge again, and this unitary map G of all the operations the agent performed has been applied to this input system. And there is again a notion of global time. Right. These pure processes also have a decomposition in the so-called causal reference frames, which is work by Philippe and Czesław. And these causal reference frames correspond to the perspectives of the agents inside the labs, inside a pure process. In particular, also inside of a pure non-causal processes, this is when they are particularly interesting. It means if we have such a G of UA and UB of the two agents, and then look at Alice's perspective, we can write the process like this, where we have two unitaries that might depend on UB, at left and right. And in the middle, we have this one term where L is this unitary is applied and nothing else happens. So this is like, from Alice's perspective, there is some moment in the middle of the process where she applies her operation. And these other two unitaries are then called the causal past of Alice and the causal future of Alice, and they might depend on Bob's operation. This might be represented by such a circuit. And we can do exactly the same for Bob. So the same process can be decomposed according to the perspective of Bob, where again, we have in the middle this moment where Bob applies his operation and some causal past and causal future of B that now might depend on Alice's operation. So we get another circuit picture, in which we call the perspectival circuits of this pure process. And in this causal reference frames paper, the only requirement was that these two should eventually describe the same process and nothing else. And of course, this was now for two parties, but we can write it down for n parties again. So if we have an n party process and want to look at the perspective of agent A1, we get this decomposition where the causal past and future can now depend on all the operations of all other agents, but the one we are looking at. Good. Now, different topic, Page-Wouters formalism. In the Page-Wouters formalism, one associates a Hilbert space to a clock or some system that is supposed to keep track of time in order to describe the evolution of a system we're actually looking at in terms of the correlations between this clock system and the quantum system I'm looking at. The physical states of a theory are said to fulfill such a constraint equation. So I have a constraint operator, and those states that are annihilated give the physical states or timeless states or history states. So the states I'm interested in. Nicest example is probably if I look at the clock as a particle on the real line and choose the time analog of the spatial momentum operator, plus another term that does nothing on the clock and has some Hamiltonian action on the system, and make that my constraint operator, I can write down this timeless state in the form here, where this small psi of t on the system satisfies the Schrodinger equation with exactly that Hamiltonian from the constraint operator. So suggestive picture partially stolen from the paper by Giovanetti, Lloyd, and Marcone is we have this timeless state that is more like a block and does not change with time. But then we have the time axis here, and whenever we project onto a certain time, t0 there, we get a slice of this block that is then this small psi of, in that case, t0. And if we look at these slices, we get a sense of time evolution. Right. Now, for what we are doing, the more important version of this formalism is the one where one can consider quantum circuits. And to do that, one looks at discrete clocks that perform a finite number of ticks. Because then if I have a quantum circuit like that, I can basically keep track of the unitary gates that I applied one after another. So I think of appending this clock system here, similar to before, but now this T has discrete ticks, 0 to large T. I think Kitaev and others have written this all out with constraint operators and what it looks like, and prove that the physical state, if you do it cleverly, looks like this. So you have the sum of all these discrete ticks that you want to look at in tensor product with the unitary gates on the input that have been applied up to that point. So this UT is exactly the t that you're considering here. So at time t zero, it's only u zero on psi and so on and so forth. Good. Now, what we want to do is look at potentially non-causal processes in a framework similar to the one of the Pagewutter's formulation for quantum circuits. In order to do that, we don't look at one clock, but introduce multiple clocks, namely one for each agent that appears in our process. Something like that has already been done by Esteban Flaminia and others, where they looked at the continuous case. So continuous clocks that were interacting gravitationally, I think, and showed that they can give rise to the gravitational quantum switch, which I think Magdalena briefly talked about. But since most processes are formulated in this quantum information language and in the causal reference causal frame decomposition gives these perspectival circuits, we wanted to find a framework with discrete clocks that allows us to regain this circuit picture. So we look at discrete clocks, but many, so one for each agent. That means we have our physical states living on a Hilbert space for the clocks, then for some input system, and then we also have to append this enough ancillas in order to consider the purified operations for the agents. As I said in the very beginning, for the pure process matrices, we look at purified operations. Yeah, and the point is now, in general, this the clock Hilbert space is a collection of clock, and this ancilla Hilbert space is the collection of ancillas. Then we get some random sums here over all the different states of all different clocks and some corresponding state on the system and the ancillas. Okay, so we start out with some reference state for all. We say all the clocks are initialized in state zero, and all the ancillas are also in some state that we call zero. And at the very end, we want that all the clocks read their final time, and the process we want to implement has been applied to this system plus ancilla state, right? And in order to capture this notion of a well-defined causal order in the beginning and at the very end, we require that at least once all the clocks should tick in synchronization. That is really just to capture what I said before. So we want to start out in some area where there is a notion of global time to according to which everything evolves. So all inside all the laboratories, all the clocks tick once, and then there comes the crazy part in the middle, and then they come out again. The process unitary has been applied to the system, and the clocks read potentially different final times, but then do one synchronized time step together again. Right, so from these big timeless states, we want to obtain the perspectives of the different agents, similar to the perspectival circuits I mentioned for the causal reference frames. So the perspective of an agent X inside this huge Pagewutter state that should encode our non-causal process, we say we get this by doing that. Namely, we project the clock associated with that agent on a certain time. And then we get up to normalization, the state that this agent would associate to everything else at that time when his clock inside his laboratory reads time tx. This n here in front of everything is a necessary normalization operator, which I will mention specifically in the examples. This can act on everything but the clock of agent X. But we had to then impose more restrictions on these operators in order to not allow everything, basically. the details of these are in the paper, but if they are reasonably nice, you have a generalization of normalization constants, basically. So you need to renormalize the perspectival states. Once you have that, they are, of course, unitarily related by what we call the perspectival unitaries of this agent. This is just the evolution this agent inside his or her small laboratory I would ascribe to the rest. And what we also wanted, again, inspired by these causal reference frames that I mentioned, is something we call a time of action axiom. So remember in the causal reference frame, decomposition, there was in the middle always this expression where a certain agent applied his or her operation. And we want to have exactly that. So there should be some time T star where when the clock passes from T star minus one to T star, the agent applies his or her operation and the rest evolves in an uncorrelated manner. Moreover, if any unitary that does not include times that are across a T star basically should be independent of the agent's operation. So because this is the agent's perspective, there is only this one time where he or she applies his or her operation. That's the idea behind that. So from the perspective, the same process that I sketched before looks more like this. So inside, this is agent A now, and so Alice inside her laboratory, her clock for her, of course, ticks one tick after another. At her well-defined time of action, TA star, she plugs in her operation basically in this potentially weird causal structure, and then her clock keeps ticking, and at the end, she sees that all the others are evolving in time according to her as well. Right. Okay. As was our intentions, we find that these perspectival circuits give a refined causal reference frame picture. To see that, I apologize, this is a bit ugly, but if you look at agent A1 in a general N party page Wouter state, and look at after you projected out the clock, right? You have a state on everything but A1's clock. You find that you can write it like this, like the second line, where you have the perspectival unitaries, that one that brings the clock from zero to TA star, TA1 star minus one. Then there is this thing that was specifically designed that it represents causal reference frame where A1 applies her operation. And then there is another perspectival unitary that describes what happens afterwards. And you might recognize here that this is exactly the causal past and causal future of party A1. But now we have a real time stamp with everything. So we get the perspectival circuits and a clock, namely the clock of agent A1 in that case, that tracks what happens. Moreover, since we can do this for, or should be able to do this for all agents, since it comes from one global state, we find that these perspectival unitaries can only be either linear or constant in any agent's operation. Because for each agent, the causal past and causal future are independent of their own operation, and there is this block in the middle where there is just UA applied. And basically, since this is the case for all agents, these causal past and causal future unitaries can have at most a one U, let's say UAI, which is not A1 in there, but nothing more fancy. And as it turns out, this is actually a pretty strong restriction. Okay, finally, the examples. The first thing that we looked at was what we call a twin paradox circuit, where we just want to see what happens if we have clocks that tick at different rates. So we start out with some input that is distributed to our two agents, Alice and Bob. In the beginning, as we said, their clocks have to tick in synchronization once. And then we have Alice going away and her clock ticks at half the rate of Bob's. Then she applies her unitary when her clock reads 2. Then there is some free evolution V in between. Then Bob applies his unitary when his clock reads times 6. But I mean, this is arbitrary just from the example we constructed. And then at the end, it's like as if Alice comes back, like in the twin paradox scenario, and there is another synchronized tick. And as you can see, like for they start out at the same time, and at the end, Bob's clock reads a larger time than Alice's. This is like, so he's the aged twin, basically, or the one that aged more. And then there are two system parts together constitute the output of this quasi circuit psi, which is given by that. Right. This is, of course, a causal process because the order of operations is clear, right? So first, as I said, first Alice acts, then there is the free evolution, and then Bob acts. This is the same for both agents. So they would both have a perspectival circuit like this. First is Alice's action, then V and then UB. But their clocks would correspond, well, would run differently. So we have Alice's clock, and according to her, time passes at another rate as it does for Bob. According to his clock, this is the perspectival circuit. Okay, the page Wouter state for what I just explained looks like this. It's not really important, just to show you what it looks like. The interesting part comes now if we, from this state here, we consider now the perspectives of the agents, right? So for Alice, doing exactly what I said we should do is like projecting and then potentially renormalizing, we get these states. And as you see, we have these non-trivial normalization operators for exactly those times when Alice's clock ticks at a different rate than Bob's. So this is when we need to plug them in there. Otherwise, this superposition state of Bob's clock that Alice sees would not be normalized. Yeah, we get the perspectival unitaries as follows, where we can clearly see the time of action for Alice, which is 2, as depicted in the example. And also important here, we see that according to her point of view, Bob's clock ticks twice for one time step of her clock here in the middle, these two, like U23 and U34. From Bob's perspective, on the other hand, we have no weird normalization operators, but we have states that are partially frozen in time. Here also between time 2 and 7. Yes, so his perspectival unitaries say that in between everything appears frozen, but he again has his well-defined time of action. Sorry, so, okay, good. So that's the twin paradox circuit. I hope this is clear. It's a nice example, but it's not the interesting part. The interesting part comes now, namely when we look at non-causal processes. I will do the quantum switch, which is the simplest example, in detail. In the paper, we consider a general coherent control of causal order. So what I mean by that, it works like the switch. So I have a control degree of freedom that determines in which order operations are applied. So for the quantum switch, I have two parties, Alice and Bob. They perform their operations UA and UB. And if my control degree of freedom is in state 0, UA gets applied before UB. And if my control degree of freedom is in state 1, UB gets applied before UA. And if I now have a control in an equal superposition, I have an operation where I'm no longer able to tell whether A comes before B or B comes before A. The causal reference frame, like the perspectival circuits for this, look like that. So depending on the value of the, this is Alice's perspective, right? So Alice applies her unitary in the middle, and Bob depending on the value of the control, either before or after. And what we now hope to find is the refined version with the clock. And the same for Bob. So his perspectival circuit looks very similar. And we want to again find this refined version. And we did. So as I said, the quantum switch is one example of indefinite causal order. This G of U A and U B is given by this controlled unitary. And this is the state. Again, the details are not important here, but the way this is built up somehow is. So we start off with this synchronized tick, and then from time two on, we have depending on the value of the control, different orderings of A and B. So if the control is zero, A's clock runs ahead of B's, and if the control is one, B's clock runs ahead of A's. Then for these two orderings, we apply what we're like the order of operations that we're supposed to apply, like independently. And then at the end, once they are applied, we resynchronize the clocks by bringing them back to the same time and then let them tick in synchronization again. So we call these steps, desynchronization and resynchronization of the clocks. Yeah, so Alice's perspective looks like this. The important thing is that we again have non-trivial normalization operators exactly during this desynchronization and resynchronization process. And other than that, we can let time progress normally. As we can also see in the perspectival unitaries, so these T's are what makes Bob's clock tick. And we have in the middle at time T4, we have the time of action exactly like we want. So Bob's clock ticks and Alice applies her unitary. Bob's perspective looks really exactly the same with only one and zero interchanged on the control. And I hope what you briefly saw now convinces you that we recreate this circuit picture. So you can see here, we have the time of action, like Alice's time of action in the middle. Before that, if the control is one, Bob applies his unitary. If the control is zero, Bob's unitary gets applied afterwards. So we get exactly that. Yeah, for Bob, we get the same picture with different control values, recreating that perspectival circuit. And as we show in the paper, but as is really way too ugly to show here, a similar procedure, meaning depending on the control, initiating different ordering of the clock of the clocks allows us to implement any process that is one with coherent control of causal order, which is a whole class of non-causal processes. An important one because it's one of the few that we actually understand how to do. However, there are other pure processes. And we considered one example. We call it the Lugano process. It's a tripartite pure process, which is not an example of coherent control of causal order, in particular for those who know process matrix stuff. It can violate causal inequalities. So it's really different from any switch-like situation. We consider the time reversed version. It looks a bit like this. So it applies the three unitaries of the three parties in a different way, depending on which subspace of a three qubit system you're on. That is not really the important part. The important part is that there is a causal reference frame decomposition for that process, which looks like this. And if you remember what I told you before, this one cannot arise from a global Page-Wouters state because, as I said, for the refined picture that we get from a global state, the causal past and causal future of one agent need to be either constant or linear in the other agent's unitary. And as you can see these gates here, before Alice acts, are non-linear in UB and UC. So this U dagger X U gates. So they are by construction forbidden in the in our framework. In general, there are other arguments why this Lugano process might not be implementable. As a Paige Wouter state, we did not manage to really prove that because this causal reference frame decomposition is not unique. There might be others, or you might need to do something even more crazy and can get away with it. From all we know now, it looks as if you couldn't write this down as one global state implementing a non-causal process the way I just described. Okay, and with that, I thank you. Yeah, so this decomposition is in conflict with this affine linearity requirement I told you about. And with this, I'm done and am ready to take questions if you have them.
So let's thank Veronica. And we have a time for maybe one or two quick questions. We are a little behind, but maybe I'll ask one question first. So you were constructing these Paige Wouter states, and I was wondering if, and usually the way we define them is they're annihilated by some constraint operator, which has an interpretation of the quantization of some constraint operator on a phase space. For these circuit diagrams and the Paige Wouter states you're considering, do we have sort of a classical interpretation of the constraint that they're annihilated?
No, because it is actually not that straightforward to find the constraint operator for these states. Because for a normal circuit state with one clock, you could then, you know, use a basis as inputs and then let basically evolve them according to this and then get use the projector onto this, like the sum of all the projectors you get there. This doesn't work for the non-causal ones because of the normalization operators. You cannot say that the easiest thing would be you say it's the identity minus the projector onto of this Wouter state that you evolve out of a basis. This doesn't work like that, and it's actually not straightforward to find the constraint operator that does the job there. So it's kind of, this is actually something I would like to look into because Max told me that this might tell us something on something else we're interested in. Never mind, we can discuss this later, but yes.
There's a few more questions here, so I'm not sure who had their hand up, but maybe if we can make them short or maybe take one more and then
I think Lorenzo had his hand up very early. So,
okay, so maybe Lorenzo, do you want to have a go, and then we can save the other two for the discussion session? Is that okay? Yeah, you'll be there at the discussions. Okay, great.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to ask, so maybe you said it and I miss it. So when you have more than one clock, how do you impose that they are good clocks for Alice and Bob? And in the constraint operator, how do you?
Well, okay. The truth is they are probably not good clocks. So this is really more of a toy model where the clocks really don't do much more than just map the discrete states like 0, 1, 2, 3 up to T. They are not, they are definitely not good clocks. They are more of a timekeeping system that you call a clock because it gives a nicer conceptual picture.
Okay. Yeah, and you're using this discrete time just because of this projection operator, or is there another reason?
Well, because of this circuit picture that we want to be able to capture. So most of the process matrix stuff is formalized in this, in the quantum info language with circuits and stuff like that. So we want to, apart from the gravitational quantum switch, but everything else down there is written in terms of, you know, circuits and unitary gates and whatever. So just to be able to use that, like stuff we already know, and see whether this is compatible with some Page-Wouters state.